Seven, if you want to weigh into any other conversation, you can send your WhatsApp messages or voice notes to 0725671567. It made for fascinating reading out of The Guardian, and I'm going to just read a piece about it. Calling a man bald is sexual harassment, an employment tribunal has ruled. Hair loss is much more prevalent among men than women, so using it to describe someone is a form of discrimination, a judge has concluded. Commenting on the man's baldness in the workplace is equivalent to remarking on the size of a woman's breasts, the findings suggests. That should get you talking. 021-446-0567. Now, the ruling was made by a panel of three men who, in making their judgment, bemoaned their own lack of hair. See where this ruling comes from? It comes in a case between a veteran electrician and the manufacturing firm where he was employed. Now, his name is Tony Finn. And he's now in line for compensation. He had worked at the West Yorkshire-based British Bung Company for almost 24 years when he was fired in May last year. He took the company to the tribunal, claiming, among other things, he had been the victim of sexual harassment after an incident with the factory supervisor, Jamie King. Just a little bit about the backstory so you understand the context of the ruling. Now, with little doubt that being referred to in this pejorative manner was unwanted conduct as far as Finn was concerned. So the supervisor called him a bald and then the C word. And this is at the heart of this particular story. It's difficult to conclude, reads the ruling, other than that Mr. King uttered those words with the purpose of violating Finn's dignity and creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating, and offensive environment for him. The judgment found, of his own submission, Mr. King's intention was to threaten Finn and to insult him. In our judgment, there is a connection between the word bald on the one hand and the protected characteristic of sex on the other. I'm not absolutely making sense of this judgment, but somebody will help us, of course, to do exactly that. Jackie Reed joins us via Zoom. She's an employment lawyer at Herbert Smith Freehills Global Law Firm. Hello, Jackie. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, well, there's a whole lot of questions that spring to mind. Is it fair for this tribunal to equate, calling a man a bald C word with the size of a woman's breast? That's one of the things that spring out.
So I think it's quite important to understand, firstly, that this is an English law-based decision, not a South African law-based decision. So that would be the first thing to note. Secondly, I think that the heading or the title of the article is a little bit misleading. And I haven't had an opportunity to read the tribunal's decision in full, but it seems to me as if what the real nub of the issue is that baldness is associated with men. And the way in which the harasser or the discriminator referred to this employee is problematic from a bullying and harassment perspective. And because he referred to him as, he used the word bald specifically, which is an identifier that identifies more particularly with men, then what they're saying is that, in my view, is that harassment is related to gender. So it's not sexual harassment in the way that we understand it, and where someone, because sexual harassment relates to unwanted conduct of a sexual nature. Calling someone a bald C word, I don't think can fall within the definition of sexual harassment as we have it in our code. On the elimination of bullying and harassment in the workplace. But I think that, so what it equates to is a form of harassment which relates to the employee's gender. But I think very importantly, there is a notion now in our law, in our new code of practice, which has recently come out and which is closely linked to the ILO Convention on Harassment in the Workplace, which is now trying to cover more examples of harassment and bullying in the workplace, toxic work environments and things like that. As I think the mental health issues around employees start to become more prevalent. And I think that's why, the ILO and now subsequently the South African government and whichever other countries have ratified the convention have decided to go this route, is because of the mental health implications of a toxic work environment, of being insulted in that manner. It's just not acceptable and it's just not okay. And so that's what I think the judgment is talking about, as opposed to actual sexual harassment, which is where it's unwanted conduct of a sexual nature. So there are innuendos, there's sexual jokes, pornographic images, things like that, that are sent between two parties, for example. So, or kissing, or, holding hands, or forcefully, or anything unwanted, of a sexual nature is, in my view, sexual harassment. And I think in this case, it was harassment related closely to gender. But in our law, harassment is a form of discrimination, whether it be sexual harassment or normal harassment.
It's that discernment that I want clearer, that discernment that you make between English law and South African law. So you are saying that this doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to see workplace changes within, especially sexual harassment laws within our workplace.
And so we've had a code on sexual harassment since 2005, and it's quite clear what sexual harassment is. We all know what it is. And I think both perpetrators and victims are quite clear as to what sexual harassment is in the workplace. Astonishingly, in 2022, we're still talking about it. We still have many cases of sexual harassment in the workplace. And, of course, we need to try and deal with those as effectively as possible in order to, reduce the number of cases that we have. But certainly harassment in the workplace and bullying, creating a toxic work environment, passive aggressive type conduct, insulting jokes, things like that are also not acceptable in the workplace and affect the mental health of employees. And of course, employers don't want their employees to have mental health issues, because if they have mental health issues, then they cannot perform properly, they're not effective, so they're paying employees to tender their services, and they're not able to in an effective and productive manner because they're conducting themselves in this problematic environment. So it's really not something that employers shouldn't look at, because it's only to their benefit that their employees are operating in a healthy, safe working environment.
Okay, so maybe just maybe drill down or just clarify completely for us. Can you define sexual harassment for us in terms of South African law?
Yes. So in Clause 5 of the Code of Good Practice, there's a long explanation of what sexual harassment is in the workplace. So firstly, it's a form of unfair discrimination, and the Employment Equity Act deals with unfair discrimination in the workplace, and Section 60 of the Employment Equity Act says that if an employee is a victim of unfair discrimination, which includes sexual harassment, then in those circumstances, they can sue for damages. So that's also another reason why employers need to look very carefully at sexual harassment. But essentially, there are different ways in which an employee may indicate that sexual conduct is unwanted. And previous consensual participation in sexual conduct doesn't mean that the conduct continues to be acceptable to the employee. But the nature and extent of the conduct can be physical, verbal, or nonverbal, whether expressed directly or indirectly, can amount to sexual harassment. So you've got physical conduct of a sexual nature, such as touching, kissing, ranging from that to sexual assault and rape, strip searching, including by a person of the same sex in the presence of the opposite sex or without the appropriate privacy, following, watching, pursuing, or accosting of an employee, sexual attention, advances or proposals, other behavior, whether explicit or implicit, including suggestions, messages, advances, attention or proposals of a sexual nature, implied or expressed threats of reprisal or actual reprisal to comply with sexually oriented requests, advances, attention or proposals, verbal conduct such as innuendo, suggestions, hints, sexual advances, comments with sexual overtones, sex-related jokes or insults, graphic comments about a person's body, inappropriate inquiries into someone's sex life, whistling of a sexual nature, and the sending of electronic means or otherwise sexually explicit text or material, nonverbal conduct such as unwelcome gestures, indecent exposure, the display or sending of electronic means of otherwise sexually explicit pictures or objects. And sexual harassment can take many forms. It can be quid pro quo harassment. It can be sexual favoritism. It can be all kinds of things. So that's basically what sexual harassment is in the workplace. It's where someone, you know, possibly, for example, and a good example of this is where, you know, you're, let's say in this particular example, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen to men because it does, but let's say you're a woman in the workplace and your superior comes to you and says to you that he would like to take you out for dinner, and he takes you out for dinner, and after dinner he suggests that you go back to his house for a nightcap, and he puts his hand on your leg and he rubs it suggestively, and he says that in the event that you have sex with him, then he will give you that promotion that you so desperately want, or he'll give you a raise or something like that. That's clearly sexual harassment. He hasn't, and even just the conversation without the hand on the leg, that's sexual harassment. He's propositioning you with sex in return for some kind of favor in the workplace, and that's sexual harassment in the workplace. It's quite clear, you know, when, imagine you're walking past someone, past their office, and they go, you know, they do the that whistle from the 80s. You know, that's sexual harassment. Someone commenting on your clothing, on your figure, oh, you've lost so much weight. That can be construed as sexual harassment in the workplace. So you need to be quite careful. I think that a lot of people, particularly men, and particularly when I talk to men about this, they kind of roll their eyes and, oh, really, can't I comment on her clothes? I was just being complimentary. And I said, well, some women will be fine with it and others will not. Why take the chance? Just be quiet. You don't need to comment on anyone else's physical appearance except your partner, your wife, your spouse, whatever it is. And don't comment on other women's
That's pretty commonplace as well. It probably has its origins in the patriarchic nature, where often these harassment charges are brought at a business level, and it's not necessarily responded to commensurately with its seriousness. It's like it's mischief. And I would imagine the first response of the employer is to put in place a process that is beyond reproach. Tell us about the employer's response.
Yes, it's particularly important because one of the things that comes up a lot, and I've done a lot of disciplinary inquiries in relation to sexual harassment over the years, and what comes up a lot from the sexual harasser's perspective is to say, but I didn't know that was sexual harassment. I didn't understand that was sexual harassment. So what the first thing that employers have to do, and they're actually implored to do this in terms of the legislation, is to implement a sexual harassment policy. So you put a sexual harassment policy, is in that policy, you can basically copy and paste the code of conduct here. And you can say to employees, right, we're going to, here's a sexual harassment policy, email everyone a copy. You've got proof that everyone in the organization received one. Make sure that all employees are aware that it's on your intranet or whatever, or at HR offices if you don't have an intranet, whatever it is. And you say to employees, you need to familiarize yourself with this. Generally, it will be in the contract of employment that in relation to policies and procedures, it will provide, or it should certainly provide, because this covers all forms of misconduct and poor performance. It will say you need to familiarize yourself with all policies and procedures in the employer's workplace. And so this is one of those policies. And so you are obliged as an employee to familiarize yourself. Then what happens is the employer starts running training sessions and starts bringing in possibly external people if they don't know how to train themselves, or bringing in people, you know, managers internally to say, guys, this is what sexual harassment means, and start giving examples. And I think what's quite important to explain to employees is this is not the 80s and the 90s anymore. We are now in 2022. Things have changed. You know, the equality divide is certainly, it's still very wide, but it's getting smaller. Women need to be treated in a certain way. This is not circumstances where you can comment in an off-the-cuff manner on the way an employee, that a female employee is dressed, or that you like that skirt or whatever it is. That is not appropriate anymore. It may have been appropriate in the 80s when we all got huge breakfast croissants for free from our employer. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but we don't have that anymore. It's the same kind of thing. Things have changed. Things have moved on. And I think that's something very important that employees need to understand. And they need to understand that the historical nature of the patriarchy and the historical nature of harassing men and women in the workplace is just simply not acceptable anymore. And you will be fired for it. You will lose your job over commenting on whether someone's skirt was short enough or not. And that may sound ridiculous to some people, but in fact, to a lot of women, that would be a huge relief to them because it's a constant reminder that they are in danger almost because a lot of women feel unsafe in the workplace. And that is one of the employer's obligations. You know, we've been talking about this in the context of mandatory vaccinations in the workplace. The fact that an employer has to make sure that the environment in which employees work is healthy and safe. And safety comes in with the sexual harassment element as well. Your employees have to feel like they are free to walk around in the workplace and not be worried about a comment or about getting a pornographic text or an email or anything like that. And employers can obviously do other things, like they can monitor because they're permitted to. It's their system, it's their computers, it's all of their stuff. They can monitor employees and how, what they do, what they send. You know, I was having a discussion with a client and they were talking about how many years ago, how they used to have, you know, Freaky Fridays kind of thing. And the men used to operate on the basis that they would send pornographic material to each other on a Friday. And this is, you know, today, if that happened, they would all get fired. You know, and that's appropriate. And that's the way to do it because pornographic material is not appropriate in the workplace. And it's not something that's within the realm of what is okay in the workplace. And I think what people need to understand is what they do in their private lives is very different to what they do in their work lives. Because of course, there's issues around reputational damage. There's issues around financial damage to employers. Employers are in a position where in the event that it comes out that the CEO of your business has been habitually sexually harassing the women in the workplace for years on end and is having affairs with them, and it's all consensual in some respects, but he is still behaving as if, you know, this is 1985 and you know, the CEO can do what he likes. And whilst it may look consensual, it may well not be as well. So you've got all these risks that you've got to mitigate as an employer. And I mean, we've seen it in also in the ESG space, which is environment, social and governance. And we've seen how employers are being, you know, are looking at ways to ensure that their environmental impact is not significant so that they have investors that are happy with the way they're approaching the issue of the environment. It's exactly the same. Because S is actually the social part. That's the employee part. And if you've got employees that are taking you to the CCMA or the Labour Court on a regular basis talking about sexual harassment in the workplace, you're not going to have a business to operate for very much longer because people talk, you know, amongst themselves in public and they say to each other, well, don't go and work for them because, I mean, I know there's in fact a law firm of which a man is in charge, and it's well known within the industry that if you're blonde, you get employed, and if you're not, you don't, and you can only be female. And that in itself is highly problematic. And there are a number of people that just won't go near that person, both as a client and as a prospective employee, because they don't want to be associated with that kind of behavior. So these are the problems that we have. And employers need to make sure that employees really do understand where we are. We are now in 2022. There are things that you cannot do. And there's been some media coverage, my apologies to interrupt, one last thing. There's been some media coverage where it talks about the new code on the elimination of harassment in the workplace and said, if you roll your eyes at an employee, you can get fired. It's a little bit extreme, and I don't think you would get fired for it, but they talk about in the code, passive aggressive and covert harassment includes negative gossip, negative joking at someone else's expense, sarcasm, condescending eye contact, facial expressions or gestures, mimicking to ridicule, deliberately causing embarrassment and insecurity, invisible treatment, marginalization, social exclusion, professional isolation, deliberately sabotaging someone's dignity. I mean, if that isn't sexual harassment, I don't know what is. Well-being, happiness, success, and career performance. If you are sexually harassed, your dignity, your well-being, your happiness, your success, your career performance are just some of the things that are going to be affected by sexual harassment in the workplace. And you can't have a situation where your employees are in that position, also because there is this extra element of damages that the employer can be exposed to. And there are a number of employers actually, and this actually happened in the UK a couple of years ago, that someone was sexually harassed in the true sense of the word sexual harassment, not in the sense that the employee was bald and insulted in that manner, but a true sexual harassment incident. And what the employer actually found, what the tribunal found is that the employer was liable because they hadn't done enough training. The last time they did any training on sexual harassment was 2 years previously. And that wasn't sufficient to ensure that all employees and employers understood exactly what was required of them. And this extends to your contractors. It extends to everyone within your workplace that comes into your workplace. You need to protect your employees and you need to protect yourself as the employer and mitigate yourself against the risks associated with damages, claims, reputational risk and the like.
I think I want to come in there. Just the process you say starts with a policy, a sexual harassment policy. It includes education to management and all of the staff about that particular policy. In the event of there being an allegation or charge of sexual harassment, the process again needs to be above reproach. How can both the complainant feel absolutely safe within the process after the allegation is made?
Yeah, so that's actually quite an interesting one because, you know, what actually happens a lot of the time, and this is unfortunate, and it also happens in the criminal context all the time with rape and sexual assaults and things like that, is you say to the sexual harassed complainant, you say, if we want to run a disciplinary hearing, which we do as the employer, we want to discipline this person's sexual harassment, you need to understand that you're going to have to give evidence at the disciplinary hearing, and then possibly again at the labor court in the event that this goes further and the person challenges their dismissal in the event that they are dismissed for sexual harassment. And the employee at that point backs off and says, no, I can't go through this again. It's too psychologically damaging for me, et cetera, and I'm scared and whatever. So I've actually advised an employer who had exactly this problem, where employees were alleging sexual harassment, but then weren't prepared to go forward and continue with the matter. Because the problem is that, well, it's not a problem because it's a good thing in our law, is that employees have a right to state their case, to obviously face their accuser, to cross-examine witnesses that give evidence against them so that there's a fair process and that employees are given a valid opportunity to state their case. So what we advised a client recently in this regard is possibly to have some kind of in-camera evidence. So you have evidence where you give the evidence as the complainant and then you provide that evidence to the person who's been alleged to have committed the sexual harassment, and then the sexual harasser can then in those circumstances respond to those allegations in writing or verbally, but not in the presence of the complainant of the sexual harassment. And
Jackie,
in those circumstances, it may create a safer environment.
I think that is such an important contribution that you make with that recommendation.